They keep saying that capitalism has triumphed. Triumph!
Ha! Yeah, listen to From the Margins on CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax every Monday from 8 to 9 p.m., covering local and beyond local issues. Lots of live and recorded interviews, recordings of public presentations, and so on. But taking a critical angle, understanding that the social problems around us are rooted in the economic system.
What will happen to the 98,000 people who are turned away? Oh yeah, capitalism is triumph! But over who?
We're not going to allow it. We will stand united. We will stand proud Mi'kmaq women, and we will do what we need to do. I will be there, and I will stop you. My ancestors are behind me. That flag carries our ancestors' history, our ancestors' blood, and we will stop you.
The Elsabogtug First Nation is a community situated in the 6th District, known as Siknuktug Traditional Territory of Mi'kma'ki, north of Moncton in Kent County, New Brunswick. Since the early days of June, this area has been the site of an ongoing struggle led by the Mi'kmaq people of Elsabogtug and joined by a diverse group of local residents and outside supporters. They have gathered to defend the water and land against the mining of shale gas. Southwestern Energy, or SWN, a Texas-based company, received permission by the provincial government to commence exploration activities for shale gas, the first step towards a process known as hydrofracturing, commonly known as fracking. Fracking was met with concerns and much opposition across the province when it was first proposed 2.5 years ago. Community meetings were held, letter-writing campaigns and petitions targeted MLAs, and rallies and legal challenges aimed for at least a moratorium, if not a ban on fracking in the province. The conservative Allward government of New Brunswick had been elected on a platform that included enacting a moratorium on fracking, but reversed course upon election. The government may have given the green light, but the Mi'kmaq people, upon whose land the resources are set to be extracted, have never given their approval for fracking to take place on their lands. The people of Elsabogtug and allies have made a firm stand against fracking in their communities. They have cited concerns over the immense volume of carcinogens and neurotoxins pumped into the earth as part of the process, the naturally occurring ionizing radiation that it brings up from deep within the earth, and the fact that there is no guaranteed safe way to treat and dispose of the dirty wastewater. Additionally, they have pointed out that even the seismic testing has been destructive, as in the case of Penobscot, New Brunswick, where many wells caved in or dried up, and homes started sinking into the ground after seismic testing. However, none of these or other concerns have mattered to the government or SWN, and as seismic testing trucks made their way forward, a protest assembled along their path, beginning with the people of Elsabogtug, and joined by more allies over time. An encampment formed, centered on a sacred fire. The resistance has endured, in spite of the fact that over 30 Mi'kmaq and non-native people have been arrested along the way, as the RCMP has acted to protect the interests of the province and SWN. On today's show, we zero in on the resistance itself, while highlighting the centrality of Indigenous sovereignty to this whole struggle. Coming up on the show, we'll be speaking with a journalist with the Halifax Media Co-op who's been on site at the Sacred Fire encampment for the past 4 weeks. We'll also hear the voices of some of the arrestees, the Grand Council Chief of Siknuktug District, and the War Chief from Elsabogtug. John Levi, War Chief at Elsabogtug, recorded at the start of the Sacred Fire.
All right, my name is John Levi. I'm from Elsabogtug, New Brunswick. I was appointed as a Warrior Chief about 3 weeks now, and we're fighting with the SWN gas company that are doing the seismic testing here in New Brunswick. And we invite all the reserves to come and support our cause. Because if it comes to your province, you know, we'll be there. We'll support you. We're asking for your help now. Please come down and support us. Bravo.
I'm speaking with Miles Howe, who's the Halifax-based editor of the Dominion magazine, as well as the Halifax Media Co-op. And Miles has been at the site for about 4 weeks now. So for starters, Miles, I was wondering, now, the site began with a sacred fire. Can you describe who were the first ones to gather around that sacred fire and what were the early activities that were being done back then?
Well, to my knowledge, and it is rather limited, but a sacred fire gives at once ceremony and purpose to any event, really, and it introduces the sacred to anything. It's, you know, if you look at it that way, it's inviting the creator into whatever action you're doing. In this case, it's an action against presence of an American-based company coming in and doing seismic testing in traditional Mi'kmaq territory, in the Siginiktuk district in particular, and right beside the Elsiboktuk First Nation. You know, that's where we're at right now. So the first people gathered around that fire were residents of Elsiboktuk First Nation, Mi'kmaq people, their allies, and a sacred fire burns for 4 days, or at least 4 days. This sacred fire has been going. This is probably the fifth time it's been lit now, I believe. So we're looking at about a 20-day sacred fire at the moment. And it needs to be tended to continuously. It needs to be monitored 24 hours a day. It's essentially treated like an ancestor or a living thing, so you can't leave it alone. It's a place of prayer. People congregate there, pray with tobacco, get smudged. There's sacred objects around it. Sweetgrass, etc.
The first wave of arrests began in early June, and these reports indicated Lorraine Claire and Suzanne Paddles were arrested on separate occasions on charges of mischief while engaged in prayer along Highway 126. So, first, could you describe what you saw, and also what the significance of people being arrested while they were doing those activities are?
I arrived the day after Lorraine got arrested, but videos show and firsthand testimony from her says that she was holding on to a drum and an eagle staff, and the police were trying to remove those objects from her possession.
I recall somebody saying that we had to be at least 50, I think it was 50 feet or 50 yards away from the truck. So what I did was I started drumming. And I start walking away from the truck. And this drum here and the staff that's in front of us, I was holding those and I was walking away and I was drumming and then I stopped. I was told I have to do a four direction before I end this song. The four directions is to honor the spirits that came to help us and to protect us that day, to give us the strength. So that's what I started to do. I wasn't resisting anything. I wasn't going against their wishes because I was walking away. I just stopped momentarily to do what the spirits had asked me to do and what my responsibility was. I started to do the four directions. I got two directions done. I started to do the third. And I was faced with a wall. RCMP officer. I still don't know what the man looks like. And when I tried to walk past him to finish the song, to finish the other two directions, he stopped me again. He stood right in front of me. I was attempting to walk away from the trucks as they asked us. He stopped me and he started yelling. I continued to pray. Because the song, the ceremony was not over. So I continued to pray, I continued to sing. All I remember is feeling his hand completely engulf the top of my head and push me down and said, arrest this one.
So for police to attempt to just cut short a ceremony that they don't particularly understand, what we're seeing is seeing a corporate agenda run up against a ceremonial process. and a woman being hurt in the process. She had extensive tendon and nerve damage to the hand that was clutching the eagle staff as they were trying to wrestle it away from her. And there's also videos of her absolutely crying in the back of a paddy wagon in pain, and people, you know, trying to address her pain and trying to get her to help her. In the case of Suzanne Pallas, Suzanne and myself and two other grassroots women walked up to essentially what it's a line of police that was basically standing between ourselves and the thumper trucks, which are the seismic testing trucks that come forward. And Suzanne proceeded to lay down a line of tobacco and a circle of tobacco and began to pray, just basically picked her up and said, "You're under arrest," and moved her out of there. To which she replied, "I'm in ceremony, I'm sovereign, you can't touch me." And she replied, "I'm in ceremony, I'm sovereign, you can't touch me." And just arrested her for mischief, for praying in the road.
The RCMP, according to Old English, molested us while we were practicing our sacred ceremonies. That's not only a violation of our human rights, it's a violation of our Aboriginal rights. And it's a shame that they don't let us finish off our four directions. Each and every time we try to do it, I don't know what's so scary about our ceremonies. It feels like we're back in the 1950s when our ceremonies were banned. You know, it really I feel the pain that my grandparents felt when they weren't allowed to sing, when they weren't allowed to dance. With the whole Idle No More movement, it was celebrating that, you know, that we're finally allowed to pray and we're finally allowed to sing and celebrate who we are. And everything that is happening out here, it's wrong because they're prosecuting us. They're criminalizing our prayers. They're criminalizing to be Ulnu. They're criminalizing. We cannot be who we are. It's becoming a crime to be who we are. They're saying I committed mischief for laying tobacco down and praying. After the police officers asked me to stay on this side of them, I did. I made the line and I made the circle, and I was just going to do my prayer and leave. That was my plan and intention, just to lay my tobacco down. And I was just starting on my one direction, and I was just about to lift my tobacco up to Creator, and they continued to arrest me. I still had the tobacco in my hand. I demanded that they let me lay the tobacco down, and they allowed it, but it wasn't easy.
It's the same argument, and I've heard it said by them, like, you wouldn't go up to a priest with a cross and, or, you know, something to that effect, and then just simply take the cross away from them as a matter of course. You'd probably demonstrate a bit more respect for a religion that potentially is understood, whereas it seems clear that the police don't have adequate training or sensitivities to ceremonies that they're observing here.
Can you describe the nature of these other arrests as you've been as an observer?
On two occasions where 12 people were arrested on each occasion, the 20 of those arrests were simply people lined up in the way of thumper trucks. Just again, it's people that do not want seismic testing going on, that do not want these trucks to be passing through, something on their land, looking for shale gas, which eventually will lead to hydraulic fracturing. And these are people that have committed to nonviolence and committed to peaceful resistance. So the best they can do is put their bodies in front of these trucks. And you know, as has become a matter of course, the police just sort of line up, and just if you don't move, then they grab you and arrest you. The remaining four on the second Friday, where 12 people were arrested, quite literally, they acted of their own accord. 8 people got arrested standing in front of the trucks, and then as the RCMP was blocking us off on the side of the road, the thumpers began to move, and one man, you know, I guess became overcome with what he was watching and quite simply ran in front of the thumper and threw himself under the bumper. It promptly stopped, but that kind of triggered it was a high emotional situation. So two other people then ran out onto the road. The man's partner, an elder, was then you know, very apprehensive as to what was going on. Trying to get to him, it's hard to see when there's a line of cops right in front of you what's actually happening. And then she tried several times to get through, to go to her partner, and then they began to rough her up, and she sustained a punch in the face in the process, and the cut lip. And that's how the last four got arrested. So that's basically the story of the vast majority. My last count was 29 people, and I'm not quite sure. I haven't witnessed any more arrests after that.
Now, as far as who is getting arrested, from what you witnessed, has there been any particular targeting of the people from the Mi'kmaq community?
Appears to actually be the case in at least the last Friday's arrests, where there were about 10 people lined up, and one woman who's spoken to me extensively about this says that she was quite literally doing her best to be arrested, and this is a non-Indigenous woman, and that the police were simply shoving her over to the side of the road. And then finally, when she refused, you know, after these numerous opportunities not accorded to the Indigenous people getting arrested, she was escorted over to the side of the road and then actually asked several minutes later if she would like to go back to the other side of the road. So so that's basically the first instance that I've really seen, or this action anyway, where non-Indigenous people, you know, can't get arrested, whereas whether or not it's a matter of, you know, of media spin or RCMP spin saying that, you know, this is an Indigenous action or not. Daily at the sacred fire encampment here, it's filled with Indigenous and non-Indigenous people who are working together to quite literally look after the water.
Some of that may be confusing for a lot of people that are following this story, is all the different names of the leaders on the scene. So I'm wondering if you could shed some light on the different leadership factions that are involved.
Sure. Well, first and foremost here, looking after the camp, is the warrior chief. His name is John Levi. John Levi is appointed by, or was appointed in this case, by the captain of the Grand Council for District 6, and his name is Newell Augustine. And District 6 encompasses, it's a bit of a not positive border, but I believe it's south of the Rishabukto River, and that's a traditional district in Mi'kma'ki territory, and that's called Siknik'tuk. Now, the Elsibuktuk First Nation chief, his name is Aaron Sock. His band council have issued a band council resolution dating back to May of 2012 against shale gas exploration in their territory. Newell Joe Augustine, captain of the Grand Council for District 6, or Siknik'tuk District, has written a letter to SWN dated June 6th, saying, "I give you no permission, essentially, to do any exploration, any shale gas testing, any drilling in my traditional district." So both levels of government here, both Indian government and the traditional government, have both said, no, your presence is not welcome here. Then, of course, we do have, it gets a bit more complicated. There's the Policy Congress, which is a grouping. It's a policy group that encompasses all 38 maritime chiefs, and we're going into the Gaspé, down into the states, I believe Maine, and across the maritime provinces, sort of encompassing traditional Mi'kma'ki territory. And that's a policy group where they get together and discuss a variety of things, including shale gas exploration. Then we have, and who sits on there is the Indian Act chiefs as well. Then we have the AFN regional chief or regional representative for New Brunswick and PEI, who's Roger Augustine. As far as we can tell, he's for it, but when pressed to go on record in interviews like yesterday, for example, we cornered him at his gala event for the Fisherman's Powwow, which drew a number of Indian chiefs as well as provincial politicians. He publicly goes on record as saying, "I don't have enough information to make a decision on this. I'm not sure. which kind of flies in the face of the fact that, you know, cautionary principle, when you're doing something as potentially dangerous as hydraulic fracturing, to come out and say, I just don't know how I feel about this because I don't know what it is, and meanwhile, you're most likely the guy signing off on it, or at least keeping the Assembly of First Nations quiet when you've got one chief here, an Indian Act chief, standing up and saying, we don't want it. What could really be used under the Indian Act system is a voice of support from either the AFN, another group which is called the AFN Chiefs of New Brunswick Incorporated, which is its own body. And instead, there's been silence from the APC, from the AFN, and the AFN-CNB.
Now, you did mention Noel Augustine, the chief of the Grand Council of Sihgnuktuk, and actually, we're going to play an excerpt from an interview you did with him.
You're the captain of District 6, yes. Sihgnuktuk. Can you just explain in your own words just a little bit about what the Grand Council is and what being a captain in that, what that is?
Basically, a Grand Council goes back to before the Europeans arrived. It had always existed, but once the Europeans arrived and treaties were starting to be negotiated, what happened was the federal government devised the Indian Act, and in that Indian Act, they kind of slowly pushed the Grand Council aside and implemented their rules and regulations on how the chiefs would be appointed, and that's why we now today we have the Indian Act chiefs, you often hear that reference made by various people all over, and they claim that and say that they are just the extension of the federal government. They are the employees of the federal government, and the Grand Council has all the jurisdiction. According to what I've heard when I was in Wotlodek from one of the lawyers, we were told that because of the Indian Act chiefs, they know the Indian Act chief do not have the power the Grand Council has. All the power that the chief had back then was riveted back to the Grand Council, and the Grand Council has all the authority now. Because the Indian Act chief cannot have that authority because of the fact that it's an employee.
What's your next step, legally, next step, from a representative of the Grand Council? What are you going to do next?
So far, I think with these 11 people that are thrown in, I think we can mount a case from there. And the only way we'll stop them, I think, is through the media and through the court. I kind of don't believe that we will get judgment in the provincial system nor in a federal system. There was a case in Quebec where a chief and the Grand Council went head-to-head, and the decision was, at that time, the judge made a ruling that the Grand Council is the head of state. So, being head of state and being this our districts, we can win the situation, but it will have to go probably to outside Canada. Probably have to go and find a neutral country where a case will be presided, where judges will rule, because we cannot get a fair shake here.
You've been listening to an interview with journalist Miles Howe. We're going to continue that interview, but first, we're going to hear No Fracking Way, the Sacred Fire theme song.
No fracking way. are free, and still we stand in Signictook, protecting land and water too.
You just heard No Fracking Way, the Sacred Fire theme song. You did lay out some of the details of the leadership. So basically, there has been a green light given from some, but then as far as the recognized leadership by the people, Noel Augustine, there has been none. So, Miles, you went to the SWN office in Moncton to follow up on this letter from Noel Augustine. Can you describe what happened?
You know, it was a matter of having called the office several times. There's a security guard on standby at the office, and I just stopped by because no one was returning my calls. And I simply asked, they allowed me to have one question, and I simply asked, did you receive this letter from Noel Augustine? And Mike Ezell, who appears to be the representative of SWN in Moncton, said, we have received the letter and we will be responding to it with another letter. I don't believe that Noel Augustine has received another letter. Having said that, I mean, this letter was received prior to them beginning seismic testing in the area. So it's, in some respects, a blatant disregard for a traditional form of government that's saying you have no permission to be here and we don't want you here. And they're simply saying, well, nice letter, we're going for it anyway.
And speaking of disregard, recently the Allward government of New Brunswick seems to have put shale gas mining as an economic pillar in New Brunswick. I believe this was just on the past weekend. So what do you think he was intending by that message, and what was the effect on the community and resistance?
When it comes down to the people that are kind of living with or stand to live with the effect of shale gas and shale gas exploration, there's no support for it whatsoever. It's come down to, realistically, a divide between do you want quick money and in 5 years potentially a poisoned landscape, or quite honestly, this isn't a boom economy, but in the same sense, it's not crumbling away or under flood, unfortunately, as we're seeing in parts of the West, where whether or not we attribute that to climate change or invasive procedures into the environment, we're still seeing a relatively clean, pristine, and green and safe environment here, and it doesn't appear that people are willing to trade that for any amount of money or any rhetoric from provincial government saying that this is an economic pillar. I don't think anybody here takes it as any more than just one more platitude from a provincial government that's sadly out of touch with the people's desires here.
You mentioned that there's a big difference between what the government's saying and what the people think and want. Now, coming back to the campsite, how is that reflected in the presence of the campsite? We did talk about the early days of the campsite, but how have things been built up around the Sacred Fire in terms of numbers, in terms of presence of different groups? I was wondering if you could describe some of that.
Well, what's happened here is it's moved locations closer to Elsabooktook First Nation. It was more of a strategic camp at one point because of the fact that it was placed right along the line of where Swin's or WN's trucks were scheduled to pass through. At that point, when they broke through that line, that camp out on the highway sort of became a bit redundant and a bit out of the way of where the action was, so to speak. So the camp moved, and it's now on reserve land. It's in a quite lovely tree-lined area, and the spirits here are far more calm people. It's very inviting. There's continuous visits. There's food, water, conversation, sacred fire. I mean, I can't really emphasize enough the peaceful nature and the positive nature of people here that are gathering. And we're also witnessing First Nations from across the territories gathering with non-Indigenous people and a sharing of cultures that, you know, has sometimes been tenuous. And I think that the effects of this will be, you know, actually long-lasting after SWN is repulsed and after there's a ban on shale gas in the Maritimes. I think that the benefits from this experience, whether you're here or not, or whether, you know, people will tell you about it or not, will be long-lasting and will be, ideally it's a beginning of a new cooperation, but is sorely needed.
We're talking about, at least at these two particular sites, you mentioned the campsite around the Sacred Fire moved, but we're talking about a month of resistance. So in that last month, what effect has the resistance had on shale gas's attempt to come in?
From having people arrested in front of it, from having women, elders being hurt, that's created a particular optic here that even, you know, the Irving-owned mainstream media can't help but ignore, and it's not one that SWN wants. They've had several work stoppages, and then what we found as well is that once they left the highway, where, you know, it was more wide open, once they stopped that highway testing, that highway sumping with the four large seismic trucks, and once they got into more backwoods rural areas, the safety of their equipment quite literally has been put in question, because the local populations and, you know, whoever might have done these things, there's equipment that has been, you know, quite literally destroyed, whether by freak of nature, whether by act of God, whether by vigilantes. It's impossible to say, but the back roads of New Brunswick and the cut blocks and the cut roads that they're establishing are, you know, it's not a safe place for their equipment, and that's been shown after only 2 days of attempting to do that. And what we've now seen is they haven't gone back to work since last Tuesday, so that's an extensive stoppage on their part. What's going on behind closed doors, if there's any attempts at negotiation taking place, it's hard to say. What we do know is, you know, once they get off the highway, it appears to be a relatively hostile environment for them. Yesterday was Roger Augustine's Fisherman Powwow Banquet. Roger Augustine's Fisherman's Powwow draws all manner of movers and shakers of the political spectrum in the Maritimes, most notably in New Brunswick. So all the provincial politicians were there. Most of the Indian Act chiefs were there, as well as Augustine himself. As well as National AFN Chief Sean Atleo. So we managed to find Augustine pulling in an SUV. Originally, it appeared he was trying to get his way in the back door and avoid the protesters or the anti-shale gas people who had congregated outside the front entrance. And we began to talk to him there about what he knew about shale gas. And it didn't really appear, you know, on record that he's willing to say that he knows anything about shale gas and that he just has no opinion on it because he just doesn't know enough. But in reality, it would appear that, you know, at the very least, that he's signed off on it, or that he is being instrumental in making sure that the only official word coming out of Indian Act chains of command or government is one press release coming from the Atlantic Policy Congress saying, you know, back off and RCMP and don't hurt our people. Which is fair and important to say, but it says nothing about shale gas or their complicity in it or whether they've been bought off or whether they, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So really we don't know all that much about what Roger Augustine's role in this all is, but we do know that he's essentially the head honcho, at least of the region. So if anything's going on here, he'd have to know about it.
Now, here's the piece that Miles Howe recorded yesterday for the Halifax Media Co-op outside Roger Augustine's Fisherman's Powwow.
The Fisherman's Powwow Banquet is hosted by Roger Augustine in Miramichi, New Brunswick. Augustine is the regional chief for the First Nations communities in New Brunswick and PEI, and the banquet draws a who's who of Indigenous and non-Indigenous political movers and shakers. Today, a group of grassroots women staged an action outside of the banquet hall, handcuffing themselves, lying on the pavement, and holding shale gas placards. They were impossible to ignore. While some Indian Act chiefs and provincial politicians tried to sidestep the action, we managed to encourage Roger Augustine himself to hear their concerns. The first interview you'll hear is with Roger Augustine. You'll then hear Augustine, New Brunswick Premier David Allward, and finally, National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Sean Atleo, address the gathered crowd. It's about 20 minutes of audio, but worth the listen. For the Halifax Media Co-op, I'm Miles Howe.
You haven't been in on what's going on in the show, that us, the protesters up front.
What about them?
No, they're protesting, they're concerned, jury arrest.
Protesting the SW line?
Yeah, what about them? What would you say?
Just, are you... Are
what,
you, are you
what is your opinion on show gas exploration?
I don't know enough about it.
You don't know nothing about it?
I don't know enough about it. You know what I mean? Like, that's just...
But that's, SWN has invested heavily into the AFN. There's millions involved. They've also invested heavily into this province.
I don't think SWN, they've invested in AFN? I don't think
they've
so.
They've donated money to the AFN. It's right in their brochure, and that's only that's being made public.
AFN?
Yeah.
In my office, you mean, or...?
Yeah.
AFN?
I know.
Are you concerned that it could destroy the environment forever and ever? Are you concerned about that? Does water and drugs go hand in hand?
Let me tell you this.
That's what I want to hear.
Yeah, let me tell you this. I'm concerned about the environment. I'm concerned about what's going on in Alberta. I'm concerned about what's going on all over the world in terms of environment, right? I'm concerned about the poverty in our communities. I'm also concerned about poverty all over the world. I am concerned. I've been involved in this business for 36 years.
Which business is that?
I'm a chief.
Right.
I'm a chief. I'm an elected chief.
Right.
I'm also a chief of the Assembly of First Nations.
Always right? been a respectable
chief. And who are you?
I'm Miles Howe.
I'm Madonna Bernard.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Miles.
I
don't want to act arrogant or pissed off, right? But you're challenging me. I respect my job. I love my job. And as a matter of fact, environment is part of my portfolio.
That's what
right?
we want to know.
You work for me because I am an individual.
Who are you?
Grassroots person.
Who are you?
Madonna Bernard. I'm from Wagon Bar First Nation.
Mi'kmaq.
Yeah, I'm Mi'kmaq.
Yeah, so Mi'kmaq.
Yeah.
So am I.
Are you concerned about drilling and water? Like you said, the economic part, the jobs. Are you concerned that there's short, the jobs for short-term?
I can't make an intelligent remark or a statement on what SWN is doing. That's not. I'm not a biologist. I am not a chemist. I'm not an expert in this field.
But SWN itself has a terrible track record in the southern states. There's scores of litigation, scores of lawsuits against them,
mm-hmm.
and you're essentially giving the green light from the indigenous perspective or from the indigenous legal perspective on allowing them into your territory and allowing them to do seismic testing, which while you might say is only seismic testing at this point, we both know they're here seismic testing looking for gas, looking to hydrofracture.
Yeah.
Look at Pennsylvania, look at Alabama, look at Texas, look at Colorado, those are wastelands.
I'm really impressed at your knowledge, right? I wish I had your knowledge.
It's not hard. It just took me about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know, but this is what you're focusing on, right? My focus is on the comprehensive approach and trying to make our lives better in our communities, right?
But there is a cautionary principle that exists.
So the economy. You're more concerned about the economy, get jobs, and to at any cost to destroy the environment. Let me answer.
For our children's future.
That's right. I am concerned. That's why I've been involved in this business. You know, Siksidui.
Okay.
All right.
Siksidui.
I'm concerned about what's happening in our communities. That's right. Right. And if I get enough intelligence, enough expert opinion, to prove to me that fracking is bad for our community, of course I'll be against it.
Where does that expert opinion need to come from in order for you to be satisfied that it is an opinion against hydrofracking? Because there's reams of studies out there. There's all kinds of information out there.
Yeah, I know.
So I know. Are you not looking at that information, yes, or is it selective, or,
well,
or
the,
what?
Yes,
because
we are.
Because they're here already.
No, the chiefs aren't looking at that.
Right.
Right? The chiefs have experts analyzing that situation now.
But so far... But so far, there's been silence from the APC,
hello,
which you helped create, from the Assembly of Chiefs of First Nate of New Brunswick Incorporated.
Yeah.
Silence.
Yeah.
Basically, what we've got is we've got Candace Paul, we've got Aaron Salk and his council issuing a BCR against it.
Yeah.
And yet, what they need at this point, essentially to stop this, to validate, to hear what they're saying, is for the rest of the chiefs' organizations.
Well,
I'll
tell you this.
For the record, I'm glad that you're staying here. You're not running away. That's good.
Yeah, it's good.
I'll shake your hand.
See, the thing to do, right? Like, I don't really have the amount of expertise to be able to give you an honest opinion right now. The chiefs of New Brunswick and Prince Edward Island are studying this now.
But
right?
Would you consider asking for a moratorium until you get that expertise?
I don't have that
because
power.
Right now they're going for it.
I don't have the power to do that.
Sorry,
right?
You guys are not chiefs of Nova Scotia. You guys are not chiefs of New Brunswick. You guys are chiefs of Mi'kma'ki.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why
right.
You guys are, you know, steering away. You guys are going for.
Well, what's your name? What's your name again?
Madonna Bernard.
Madonna, give us time, right? Give me time, right? Like, I'm not asking.
This started before researching it properly, because basically what you're saying is I don't know enough to have an opinion on this.
You haven't,
and
been,
yet it's
you
it's,
haven't
it's
been brought
right
off,
now.
Bought off, or stuff like that. This is your opinion, right?
That's my opinion. Yeah.
Your opinion.
Yeah.
So if you see that show gas not good for you, you will say it, right?
That's right. Exactly.
So
that's,
we have to educate
that's
you.
That's right.
Okay.
That's the bottom
that's
line,
right?
Right?
That's my. He said it for me. Shake my hand. I got
to
leave.
What do you need for that to happen? What do you need to see?
I'll do this. All right? Okay.
How's your day?
Well, so far, so good.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah,
no, I admire you not running away. I really admire that.
Thank you.
You should go in the front door, though, because there's a lot of people there.
I'll go through.
All right.
When are you coming in? We've had 33 people that have been arrested, Roger. 33 people.
I know all that.
This woman just for praying.
Not
your relative. This is a position that she was arrested in.
I thought this was my friend.
It was my grandfather. I got arrested with my friend. Roger, when are you
going to
come listen to the people?
I would be there.
Can you tell me when?
Be there, like, as soon as this powwow is over, right?
Coming down
so
tonight?
This is more priority.
No,
water is more
tonight.
Important than
Roger.
The
Roger, yeah. We've been there.
Listen, let me tell you this. I know you all have certain opinions, right? You've got to respect the people, especially the children and the elders that are at the powwow.
Yeah.
That's all I'm asking.
And
I'll respect what you're doing too, right? It's two ways.
Yeah, and we're
don't
not there protesting,
right.
Roger.
Right. Okay.
We're here
for our quiet,
right.
No drums.
Okay.
Roger, all we've been there for 3 weeks protest. Where
but
have
I
you
mean,
been?
But let me tell you one more time.
People have been arrested.
Let me tell you one more time. The powwow that I put together,
yeah,
it's all about the spirit and peace and friendship.
I was
let
there
me
last
finish
year.
That. Let me. Okay, I know you were there.
Yeah.
Let me finish that, and then we'll talk. I'll be there. I'm not afraid.
Roger?
I'm not afraid. I know I take my direction from the chiefs, right?
Roger,
and
you're supposed to take
point.
Them from the people, though.
Not the
I
chiefs.
Know that.
You just
but
said
give
you
me,
take it from
but
the
give
chiefs.
Me time. You know what I mean? Give
we've
me time.
We've been on this battle for 2.5 years, Roger. Two
if
and a half years we've
let
been
tell
doing
you, let
this.
Let me tell you this, my dear. I've been at this battle for 30 years, right? What have I done? Did I do something to destroy this? Destroy our country? Or did I do something to destroy our people?
You're
no,
letting
sir.
Our environment
you
be
no.
destroyed at this point by not acknowledging
give me time and give me a chance. That's all I'm asking.
Roger,
that's
we don't
asking.
Have
Roger,
time.
Roger,
we need
right.
you to speak
you
up.
We don't have time.
I
Mr.
Will.
Augustine, will you ask that Mr. Allward come out as Minister of Northern and Indian Affairs from New Brunswick and speak to us? Not as Premier?
As a conflict of interest.
What do you mean, Allward?
Mr.
Allward. The guy that just walked in about 20 minutes ago.
I don't tell Allward.
No.
I don't tell the Premier. I will ask him.
Ask him to come out and speak to the people.
Maybe.
As the Minister.
Listen. Right? You're asking me. You're asking me. I can
as
only answer
chief.
For myself.
Just
as
a minute,
regional chief, right? And as a former chief at Mill Ground for 20 years, right? As I told you, I've been involved in this business for 36
Roger,
years.
We're not interested
right?
in your credentials. We're interested
no,
in what's
you're
going
insulting
on right
me.
Now.
I don't think that's fair.
If you're going
to
listen to the people,
you.
Now's your chance.
Is this fair?
Hello,
is this fair, Roger? Is this fair?
No. I know it's not fair. I'm not saying it's fair.
This is our responsibility to be here to protect Mother Earth.
You want another free trade for you?
I know what you're doing. I know it's important. And I'm expecting what you're doing. That's why I'm standing here answering your questions.
Then start speaking up for your people, Roger.
Yeah, wait, Roger.
Yes, I know.
When did you
see me not do that?
For the last 2.5 years.
But you will see me there.
Okay, just
when will I see you there, Roger? I want to know a time frame.
In about a week.
Because it's been 2.5 years.
Give me a week, all right? Give me a week.
How many more people are going to get arrested in 1 week?
Don't insult me, sweetheart.
I'm not.
I know. Don't insult me.
Okay. Can you?
And we can work together. We can work together on this.
All right.
So Chief Candace Paul has a meeting with.
Ask for a moratorium.
What'd you say?
Chief Candace Paul hasn't been helped and supported by AFN-CNB, has she?
We know.
Pardon me?
Not yet.
Well, how long is it going to take? She stepped out.
Ask for a moratorium.
So why can't we have more people step out with your guidance?
I will not ask her questions
in regards to Candace, right?
No, I know that.
You're asking me questions?
No, I said, why can't you help more people step out with your guidance?
You've been the same question about 10 times now, right?
And we haven't gotten an answer.
Yes, you did. I gave you an answer.
It takes time.
I gave you an answer.
We don't have time, Roger. I'll see you in a week. I'll see you July 10th. That's my birthday.
The people are against shale gas. Exploration, everything.
It's not about resource sharing. We don't want it. We don't want 1 cent from
the
chiefs earth.
Care about the money. We don't. Chief Candace Paul has stepped down from AFN-CNB because she is against shale gas.
Hopefully Aaron Salk is going to do so much pretty soon.
You are the Minister of Indian Affairs, and you have not taken the time to come here with our people. The chiefs have not. We've had 4 chiefs come to the site. They are supposed to be representing the people, but they're not talking to us. Right? These are just a select few women that came out to bring the message to our chiefs and the Minister of Indian Affairs, who has not spoken to us. What do you have to say for yourself with the shale gas issue and the people? Not the government, not the chiefs, the people.
What we've said from square one, my first comment in terms of protests, and I've said this from square one as well, we live in a democracy.
Okay.
After every interview that we've seen Charles do, you say it was arrested for sure.
Look at her. This is how she was arrested. She was in ceremony, and she was arrested like this.
So we know
how
we have the right
look
to protest.
At that and
in,
think there's
in
something,
a,
and
in
not
a lawful and,
wrong.
And peaceful way. Right. So that's the first piece. So you have you certainly have the opportunity to
and we've done that.
To voice your concerns as you are to me now. What I've also said before as well as a party in the past election we ran on a clear platform. That platform included the responsible development of natural gas in New Brunswick.
But there's no consultation and consent.
Election is part of that process and part of the process that we are ongoing with our First Nations as well. And
with the chiefs, not the people.
And there is a responsibility, a duty to consult that we take very seriously on the development of natural resources within our province, and we are carrying that through.
Why haven't you come to the people? You're the Minister of Indian Affairs. Why have you not come to the people?
I'm here.
Because Roger came in and asked. You walked by us the first time.
No, I stopped when I came in. There's an event going on inside. I will be back outside.
I said
hello to people going when we came through. I didn't come in. I spoke. Okay.
So we have the opportunity to do this because you're not coming to us, the people. So that's why we feel we have to come to these types of events.
And again, you're here voicing your concerns. There is a process, and I certainly support that process.
The process cannot start when the process has
been finished. We cannot wait for consultation when drills are already dug. That is not proper consultation. You can't tell me that's seismic work.
Have you had it done in front of your house like I did?
Look, I have.
Have you had it done? Drilling holes 15 meters deep and implanting explosives into the ground to get readouts, and then filling it back up with bentonite, which is toxic substance. And that's exactly what's happening.
I live in rural New Brunswick.
Were they seismic testing for the highway?
And we have not had a deer since.
No, none of us can. I fully agree.
Will you come back in a different setting and talk to the people?
Can you please come to the people? And I don't mean with cameras. We specifically asked for there to be no media here at this event with our women because we did not want to be seen as a media photo op. Okay. Will you take the time?
I have no issue at all in sitting down and talking.
Grand Chief Fatlio.
Yes.
Anyway.
Where's your stand on shale gas in New Brunswick?
I just talked to Wendell Nicholas, and I understand he's in some sort of an appointed peacekeeping role.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the first thing, is to ensure safety and security, and it's
for us, not for...
And I've asked him to speak with the chief. I spoke with Raymond Robinson as well.
He's not our chief.
He's not from these territories.
So, I didn't say he was. What I said was that I've asked Wendell to speak to the chief because I always respect the local protocol. I'm elected and put in place by the chiefs. The Assembly of First Nations has a formal resolution opposing a threat. That's been in place since last summer. Or maybe it's
so why are we here? Why are we here, Roger? Why are we here, Chief?
Can you repeat that for me?
Charles, make sure.
Hold on. Can you repeat that for me? You have a what?
The Assembly of First Nations has a formal resolution. I can get a copy of it. It should be on our website. So that's the first thing, because the chief said, you know, we don't know what the impacts of this activity is. So it shouldn't be happening until we know what the impacts are. That's what the chiefs were saying.
We've done enough
research. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the Assembly of First Nations, in my role as national chief, is not to overstep the authority of chiefs and the citizens in their own territory. So my support is there for the chiefs and the positions that they take. So if there's a chief, to be clear, because that's what I'm just saying, is that if a chief stands in opposition to it, then I stand in support of that chief's opposition.
But you stand in support of
Chief Aaron Sock.
I stand in support of the chiefs, yes.
So when they take a formal position... When a chief takes a stance, then I stand with the chiefs in support of their opposition.
So are you in support of Chief Aaron Sock, or are you waiting for... No, I haven't spoken with him yet.
So that's the first thing. I always want to make sure that I'm able to speak directly because that's respectful protocol.
But that VCR has been around since probably May 4th.
Second of all, if there's a formal VCR and the chief has taken a formal position, then I stand fully in support.
Do you stand in support of an injunction if you were to do one?
Well, I'm asking to speak with him as soon as possible.
There's
Aaron.
Oh, thank you. Chief, your ears were burning. Is that you? It's Sean Atleo calling. Good, good. I'd left a message through Wendell. Did he talk with you? Okay. So
we're at the
Kin Center, and just having a conversation about the stance that you're taking against fracking, and you have a formal position, right, Chief? And it's an opposition, and it's to call for the activities to stop. Okay, so that's what I was saying to those that I'm speaking with here. That my role is to not overstep the authority of chiefs, but to stand in support of. So, just in hearing that. I would receive that as direction to provide political support to the stance that you're taking. Very well. Okay, that makes it perfectly clear. That's what those who are here were saying. And I'd spoken with Raymond Robinson, left me a couple of messages. I just spoke with him and let him know that I would want to speak with you. And so I wasn't sure if there was an invitation to come by the site. And if there was, you know, I'd be happy to do that. It would mean my wife and I just adjusting our travel plans, but sometime tomorrow. Okay. So okay. Okay, so I'm going to sort of work through Wendell because he was the one doing the organizing.
Yep.
And so just have to make sure that my wife is she's my big boss is okay, and I'm sure she will be. So we'll be in touch. And are you going to be around tomorrow for us to be able to speak further? Okay. Very good. Okay, I don't know whose phone.
Kathy.
So thank you, Kathy.
Kathy says hi.
All right, so I just spoke to the chief.
Hold on one moment.
Here's Chief Candace Paul.
Well, they're right. On speaker.
Hello, this is Sean. Whose phone is this?
Angie.
Oh, no. Angie just passed me the phone, Chief. How are you? Good, thank you. Just having a conversation about strong feelings and strong stances on the developments that are occurring, and just making sure that it's well understood that my role is never to overstep the authority of chiefs in their home territories, but to stand in full support. And what I'm hearing is that yourself and Chief Sock, I just spoke with Aaron, have strong stances that are in opposition to the development that's happening. Yeah, so it's helpful to, you know, to speak directly. I've just come from supporting the First Nations impacted by the floods in Alberta. Absolutely devastating, and I'd received an invitation phone call from one person to come to the site. But just going through the protocol of speaking with Chief Aaron before doing so, and he says that would be welcome. So we're going to work on details of that, and perhaps sometime tomorrow. Very good, Chief. Well, glad to be able to touch base even briefly, so hopefully we'll stay in touch on this. And all right, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chief.
You just heard a piece recorded yesterday by journalist Miles Howe for the Halifax Media Co-op outside Roger Augustine's Fisherman's Powwow. And now for the conclusion of my interview with journalist Miles Howe.
I want to add that people, you know, should be looking into this seriously. I know in a cityscape where many of us are beginning to most of our lives, water just comes from a tap. But when you're out here and you see the real lakes, streams, rivers that have the potential to be polluted, and you see people that rely on for medicines, for hunting, for fishing, where there's a far higher level of interaction with the natural environment than we might otherwise spend in town, you realize the dangers firsthand of polluting this environment irreparably, and that money simply doesn't factor into the equation at a certain point. So I urge all people to kind of, you know, assume that mindset, if you would. Get back to your rural mindset and, you know, come up here, pay a visit if you can, because this battle is for everybody's water, and the mood here is not just about kicking SWN off of, you know, Elsabook took land or Siginik took land or even New Brunswick. Thoughts are high here of getting the maritime wide ban moratorium placed on hydraulic fracturing. So I encourage you to take this up as your fight and to take part in any way you can.
Thank you, Miles.
Quite welcome.
You just heard the conclusion of my interview with Miles Howe, recorded today. This episode of From the Margins has been about the resistance to shale gas in Siknooktook, Mi'kma'ki Territory, Kent County, New Brunswick. It was produced by myself, Asif Rashid, and Pierre Lazelle. For more information on this issue, check out sacredfirenewbrunswick.wordpress.com and the Halifax Media Co-op. For more information on this issue, check out sacredfirenb.wordpress.com and the Halifax Media Co-op at halifax.mediacoop.ca.